Some stretch, but I hope today we can get the Israelites into the promised land successfully. And then next week we can talk a little bit about some of the developments during the time of the judges when they were in the promised land. We're getting to the point where we can talk a little bit about sources now for things that were going on in Palestine. So let me just begin, before we get into our main topic of Jericho, let me begin by pointing out some source material that we have for the 15th century. That's when I would put the entry of the Israelites into Canaan would be in the 15th century. Of course, it would be at the very end, according to the date that we've worked out for the conquest, around 1410 or 1400. But I think it's important to be aware of some of the other things that were going on in Canaan, as we know from our sources. First of all, of course, we have the biblical material relating to the conquest. So that would be the book of Joshua and Judges, chapter 1. Then we have some Egyptian records that tell us a little bit about some campaigns, basically, that were going on in Canaan just prior to the time of the Israelite entry. We have talked about Tutmosis III and his battle, his going against the coalition at Megiddo, and this was in about 1483, and this was his first campaign in his 22nd year. So, depending on which chronology you use, you may come out with different dates, B.C., but using the chronology that I propose, Wente and Ben Sicklin, it would be about 1483, and this is usually referred to as the Battle of Megiddo, because most of his record dealing with this campaign centers around his conquest of Megiddo, where these kings were taking refuge, a coalition of various Canaanite kings. This brought about very important changes in the area, in the land of Canaan, because from this point forward, it's under Egyptian authority. It becomes an Egyptian province, basically. From this time forward, all of these kinglets had to swear an oath of allegiance to Tutmosis III, and he had them under his thumb from that point on. There's another document that seems to relate to this campaign, and it's kind of a legendary story. It has to do with the taking of Joppa, but it seems to be this particular campaign that is in view in this document, and so I throw it in here, although it doesn't tell us an awful lot historically. Nevertheless, it comes from this period. Then we have also from the reign of Tutmosis III a list of rations issued to what are called Marianu. These are chariot commanders. And these rations are for various cities in Canaan. And so again, not an awful lot of information historically, but it's some information. So this would be rations to Marianu. Then in the reign of Amenhotep II, we have several campaigns. The one that seems to be the one that directly involved Canaan was in his year 9. In this campaign, he mentions a number of cities in the land of Canaan, and it seems that he was in the Sharon Plain and in the Jezreel Plain. Now, he had two campaigns previous to this, one while he was still crown prince. In fact, it was while he was on that campaign that Thutmose III died. And when Amenhotep II came back to Egypt, he was immediately made pharaoh. But this campaign seems largely to be concentrated further north in Syria. He merely marched through Canaan, as far as we can tell. And the same thing with the next campaign, I think it was year 7. It seems that he just marched through and really didn't do anything in Canaan proper. This is published in Annette 246 to 47. Then after that, we really have no records for the 15th century from Egypt dealing with any campaigns. With regard to the campaign of Amenhotep II, there is a possible biblical reference to this in that there's a couple of passages that talk about God sending the hornet before the Israelites into the promised land before them. Some have interpreted that to mean that some Egyptian pharaoh came through and perhaps softened up some of these city-states or some of the Canaanite armies. The only possibility for that, I think, would be Amenhotep II. Whether or not that's what that hornet reference means or not, I can't be certain of that. But the hornet was used as one of the emblems of the pharaoh. So it's a possible interpretation. Then we have quite a few items from Palestine itself. We have, first of all, the Tanakh letters. These are an interesting group of clay tablets written in the cuneiform. First 12 tablets were found by the Germans in 1903 and 1904. They were the first ones to excavate at this site of Tanakh. It's near Megiddo up in the Esdraelon Valley. And then in 1964, there were some renewed excavations there, and one additional tablet was found. So now we have a total of 13 cuneiform tablets from Tanakh. This is, in fact, the largest collection of cuneiform tablets to be found in Palestine. We have a total of, I think it's up to 35 now, and the most in any one group is this group at Tanakh. They are dated to around the mid-15th century, sometime around 1450 B.C., or perhaps a little afterwards. In fact, they seem to be, at least two of the letters, seem to be related to this campaign of Amenhotep II in 1442. Several of the tablets are merely lists of names. We're not quite sure what these lists signify. They're personal names. They're interesting to study in their own right because you can distinguish various ethnic groups in these names. They might be just personnel, military personnel, or who knows what, lists of slaves. But the most popular theory, I think, is that they're military lists of personnel that were being sent from one place to another. As I say, two of the letters are from someone named Amenhotep. Excuse me, no, it wouldn't be from this this campaign. It's probably the campaign he was on when he was still crown prince, because in the letter there's not the title of pharaoh, but there is the name of Amenhotep. And so perhaps it's around 1450 B.C. And the tone of the letter is very much from someone of high authority, very dictatorial, very demanding, send this and send that and do this and do that. And so most scholars do in fact believe that these are from Amenhotep II, probably while he was crown prince, when he was on that campaign, just going through the region and demanding supplies and various items from this king at Ta'anak. So this is quite an interesting group of documents. We don't have many, so it's always welcome to get anything at all. We have one published in the ancient Near East, one, page 277. And I think there's three of them published in Annette. Then we have what's called the Mikal Stela. This was found at Beth Shan by the University of Pennsylvania excavation there. And it's dated to sometime in the 15th century. We can't be sure exactly the precise dating of it, but it came from an Egyptian temple there. It's merely a sort of a dedication to this god Mikael, god of Beth Shan, so he even has the place name on the stela, and there's a mortuary prayer. So it doesn't tell us an awful lot other than that Egyptians were there and had some influence and evidently had a temple. This is published in Annette 249. Then we have another stela from Kerbert, L-O-R-E-I-M-E-H. It's on the Sea of Galilee. And this is just a fragment of a victory stela in hieroglyphs. And it mentions the Mitanni, which was a people from the northern part of Mesopotamia. And some date it to the time of Thutmose III, but I think most lean toward Amenhotep II and his year 9 campaign of 1442. This is not in Annette or ancient Near East. It's in Aharoni's book, Land of the Bible. He talks about it. The translation is not there. It was published in the Journal of Egyptian Archaeology, number 14, in 1928. And then we have one other tablet from Gezer. Again, Akkadian. And this is dated to either Amenhotep II or possibly Thutmose IV. This is in Basor, published by Albright in 1943, Basor 92. It's very fragmentary. We can't make an awful lot out of it, but nevertheless, it's important because we find so little of this kind of material. So now let's begin a discussion of the conquest itself. First, I must tell you about Jericho. Before we get to Jericho, let me say a few words about Bimson's book. Probably most of you are familiar with John Bimson's book, Redating the Exodus and Conquest. It's made quite an impact. Most of the liberal types have sort of written it off and haven't taken it too seriously, but many have given a fairly good review of the book. The title itself is interesting because he has to call it Redating the Exodus and Conquest because of the 13th century date for these events being so firmly entrenched in everybody's mind in the field that to suggest that these events might have happened earlier back in the 15th century would require, in fact, a redating, even though that date's always been there in the Bible. That's the biblical date. It hasn't changed, but he calls his book Redating the Exodus and the Conquest. Bimson does a very nice job of showing that there's just simply no evidence or no good evidence for a 13th century date for a conquest. I think he does a very good job on taking care of that particular theory. Then he suggests that the destructions that we observe at the end of the Middle Bronze Period should be attributed to the Israelites, and this should be equated with the conquest narrative in the Bible. Now, of course, the date that most people use for these destructions is 1550 BC. Bimson spends a lot of time trying to show that there's no firm basis for that date. In that, he's entirely correct. It's sort of floating. It's simply based on Albright's assumption that these destructions are somehow related to the expulsion of the Hyksos. And that's it. There's no other basis at all for that 1550 date. So it's sort of floating, as Bimson points out. Where the book is weak is his evidence for his proposal, which is that we should, the way he puts it in the book, we should lower the end of the Middle Bronze, lower the dating for the end of the Middle Bronze period by 100 years, bring it down to, say, 1440, and then link it up with the conquest. Now, you get hung up on terminology here because he keeps talking about lowering the end of the Middle Bronze period. I would rather talk about lowering the date of the destructions of these cities at what has been called the end of the Middle Bronze. I have looked in detail at the site of Jericho and have concluded that it wasn't destroyed at the end of Middle Bronze at all, but in fact it was destroyed at the end of Late Bronze I. So I'm even more radical than Bimson. Whereas Kenyon said it was destroyed in 1550 at the end of Middle Bronze in association with the Egyptian expulsion of the Hyksos, I say no, she was off by 150 years, and we have to bring that all the way down to around 1400, that destruction. Now, Bimson's idea was that you would merely lower the end of Middle Bronze down to, say, 1440, and that's when you would date the conquest. But as I say, he really has no good basis for that. He's not an archaeologist. He doesn't know pottery. And, in fact, he doesn't know the details of the archaeological data very well. He's a fine scholar, but he's just not trained in that area. So his book has some strengths, but it has some weaknesses, and no one has really followed his proposal of redating all of these destructions, because he has no real basis other than saying that, well, if the conquest didn't happen in the 13th century, then it must have happened earlier in accordance with the biblical chronology, and these destructions at the end of Middle Bronze must be from the conquest, because there's no other destructions around that time period that we could relate to an Israelite conquest. So sort of by default, then he says they must date then to the 15th century, toward the end of the 15th century, rather than mid-16th century. Bimson put out a second edition to his book. I think that came out in 1981. The first edition was 78, which is it was merely a publication of his doctoral thesis. But then he made some revisions, republished it, and ever since 1981, he's been working on a third edition. But things are changing so fast that he has never really been able to put this third edition together to publish it. He keeps having to rewrite and rewrite and rewrite. We're in close contact with each other. We don't agree on everything, but I think we agree on most things. So, you know, with my work on Jericho, that's kind of thrown his idea off a little bit because, as I say, his idea was to lower the middle bronze, end of middle bronze, and he wasn't trying to bring these destructions all the way into the late bronze one, which is what I'm advocating. So at any rate, his book has made quite an impact. It's an important book, and it's really the best source of information on the whole conquest problem. He's just packed it with all kinds of information and references, and so it's an excellent book. Well, let's talk about Jericho now. Jericho, of course, was the first city that the Israelites came to when they came into the land of Canaan. They had, of course, campaigned east of the Jordan Valley and conquered that territory. But when they crossed the Jordan and they came into Canaan proper, the first city they came to was Jericho. And we have quite a number of chapters in the book of Joshua devoted to events that took place there and the ultimate victory by the Israelites. This city and the next city they conquered, Ai, are the two sites that have given us the most problem, the biggest difficulty in trying to correlate the archaeology with the biblical record. As I just mentioned, Kenyon dated the destruction there to 1550. And of course, said that destruction had nothing to do with the Israelites. It's much too early. And so that's been the scholarly opinion on the matter since her work in the 1950s, up until the time I got involved. Now, prior to her work, there had been two other expeditions to Jericho, quite important ones. The Germans had an excavation there between 1907 and 1909 under Sellen and Watzinger. Things were a little crude in those days, and they had a little difficulty dating their materials, but yet they made some important finds. They concluded that the Bronze Age city, a great fortified Bronze Age city that was there, was destroyed at the end of Middle Bronze in about 1600, according to the chronology that was in use at that time. John Garstang got involved some time later. He was the first director of the Department of Antiquities in the area of Palestine. It was under the British mandate when he came there in the 1920s to set up the Department of Antiquities. But at any rate, he got interested in this problem of Jericho, and he felt that there should be some further excavations at the site because he didn't think the German conclusion was necessarily valid, and he wanted to check their dating, look for evidence for the fortification system, the walls that fell, and so on. Now, as far as I can tell, Garstang was not a believer, as far as I know, but he had a high regard for the Bible, and he considered the biblical account as being fairly accurate. And so he wanted to go back and look for evidence for the walls that fell and also to date that destruction of the Bronze Age city. So he went back in the 1930s, dug from 1930 to 1936. He found some fallen walls along the crest of the tell, and he related these to the conquest, and he said these are the walls that fell. And in fact, you still read about these walls and books every now and again. One wall fell in and one fell out, and this was related to the story in Joshua. Also, he found on the east side of the Tell evidence for the destruction of the Bronze Age city. And he dug quite a large area, and we'll look at it in a moment in the slides. But from the pottery he found, he dated that destruction to about 1400 B.C. And he said, well, this is obviously the Israelite destruction, because that's the date you get from the Bible. The basis for his dating was that he had excavated some tombs in the cemetery, and in those tombs he had found some Egyptian scarabs. And from the pottery, in association with those scarabs, he worked out a sequence of pottery for the period at the end of the Middle Bronze Period and the beginning of the Late Bronze Period, roughly the 16th and 15th centuries along in there. And he found that same kind of pottery in the destruction level on the Tell. And he knew his pottery very well. And he had worked out a very good sequence of pottery types for this transition from Middle Bronze to Late Bronze. And so that was his primary basis, was the pottery that he found in the destruction. Then another line of reasoning was that Jericho is not mentioned in the Amarna letters. We'll talk about the Amarna letters next week, but these are a collection of letters from the kings of Canaan sent back to the Egyptian pharaoh, and they date to the mid-14th century, around 1350 B.C. or so. And Jericho is not mentioned in any of those letters. All of the city-states are mentioned in those letters, and so that would lead one to believe that Jericho was not in existence at this time in roughly 1350 or maybe 1360 B.C. So Garstang felt the city could not have lasted beyond 1400, and from his pottery evidence, he placed the destruction at the end of Late Bronze I, right around 1400 B.C. Well, this fits nicely with the Bible, of course, and was written up in many books. Garstang wrote up a popular book on it, as well as his own preliminary reports on the excavation. And so conservative types were very happy, because here we had the evidence to back up the biblical account, and even the walls that fell, the destruction, great thick layer of ash, and so on. Toward the end of the 1940s, then, Garstang was getting his material ready for final publication. And he wanted someone else to look at it, since 10 or more years had passed now, since the time he did his work. He wanted somebody to check his conclusions, particularly the dating of the pottery. So he asked Kathleen Kenyon to go over all of his materials, his excavation results, his pottery, and so on. She was an up-and-coming archaeologist in England. Garstang was in England, of course. So she looked over his work and what he had done there, what he had found, and she disagreed with his dating. She wrote up an article in 1950 in the Palestine Exploration Quarterly, where she discussed her reasons, but she felt that the destruction really took place 150 years before Garstang's dating, at the end of Middle Bronze in about 1550 B.C. Because of the question of the dating of that destruction and the walls, she again was quite skeptical about these walls that Garstang had found, whether they had any relation to the Israelites. She wanted to investigate the fortification system, the dating of the destruction of the Bronze Age city, and also Garstang had found evidence for a in the 1950s. She excavated quite a number of different areas around the Tell, but for our purposes, our interest here in the conquest, the area that's most significant, well, there's actually two areas. One on the west side, she dug a trench on the west side of the Tell through the fortification system, and there she found the walls and so on. from that, the Bronze Age city. We'll talk about that when we look at the slides. And then over on the east side, she dug some squares just north of the area Garstang had dug, where he found the evidence for the fiery destruction of the city. She opened up five squares, but in only two of them did she find the material that Garstang had found. In the other squares, it was all eroded away. But in two squares, she did find the same, exact same thing that Garstang had found, a great thick layer of ash. Obviously, the city had been violently destroyed by fire. And she found some pottery, naturally. And based on that, the material from those two squares, she concluded, yes, indeed, she was right. The city was destroyed in 1550. At the end of Middle Bronze, it was destroyed by the Egyptians, and the destruction had nothing at all to do with the conquest in the Bible. Now, everyone accepted her conclusions. She was a great field archaeologist, and in that dig, in fact, she introduced what we would call scientific excavation methodology into Palestinian archaeology, with her great emphasis on digging by stratigraphic layers very carefully. Also, her emphasis on the bulks, the recording of the bulks, the interpreting of the bulks. And so because of her reputation as a great archaeologist, no one doubted her findings, and everybody accepted her conclusions. This was an up-to-date excavation using the latest methodology, and she found that Garstang was wrong. The city had been destroyed 150 years before, and this created a problem then, because there was no city there for the Israelites to destroy, either in 1400, or if you like the 1230 date better, there was nothing there in 1230 either. So that presented a problem in biblical interpretation, and the conclusion was, by most people, that the biblical account is simply a folk story, just an etiological tale made up to explain the ruins there at Jericho, a story to explain how the Israelites came into the land, and there was really no historical basis for it. I got involved when I was doing my thesis research. My subject was the local Canaanite pottery of the late Bronze Age. So in the course of my work, I was going through all the excavation reports and to trying to find pottery that I could use in my thesis. And I looked at Garstang's material from Jericho, and I saw what looked to me to be Canaanite pottery from the 15th century, from the late Bronze I period. But according to Kenyon, the site was deserted at that time. There was no city there. So that made me wonder a little bit about what was going on here as far as her conclusions. I didn't do anything more with that until after I completed my thesis. At the time I was doing my work, her excavation reports weren't available yet. They weren't published until the early 80s, and by the time they got out to libraries and whatnot, I was finished with my thesis, and so I was able to get her excavation reports after I completed my doctoral thesis in 1985. And then I dug a little deeper into this matter to see, you know, what did she base her dating on, what kind of pottery did she find, and so on. Well, when I looked in her reports, I found exactly the same pottery, Canaanite pottery from the 15th century B.C. I said, now what's going on here? Kenyon could not be wrong in her dating. I don't understand this. And so I began going through all of her written material, her articles, books, everything she had written on Jericho. In the excavation report, there is no analysis of the data. It's just simply a presentation of the raw material. In fact, the excavation reports did not come out until after her death. Now, she did pretty well put together the first volume, but after that, someone else did all the work, the editorial work. So there's no analysis, no detailing of how she came up with her conclusions. You have to get that from other articles that she wrote. But in those articles, again, there's no detailed analysis, just statements, a couple of statements here and there. So the first thing I found was that no one had ever done a thorough analysis of the material to determine the date of the destruction. And when I looked at Kenyon's statements on the matter, what she did was base her dating on the lack of evidence rather than on what was actually found. She was looking for imported pottery that is common in the 15th century BC. Now, that sounds like a strange procedure, perhaps, but yet that's what Palestinian archaeologists were using at that time for dating of late bronze material, was imported pottery from Greece, Mycenaean pottery, and from Cyprus. And so she did not see imported pottery in her two squares that is somewhat common in the 15th century B.C. And because she did not find this imported pottery, she said the city must have come to an end before the 15th century. And the most likely time would be the end of the Middle Bronze period, when there were, we know there's other destructions, and according to the theory that was prevalent then, is still prevalent now, in fact, these destructions were caused by the Egyptians in around 1550. So she simply tied her findings there into Albright's findings and others that had latched on to this idea and dated destructions at other sites to 1550. So it becomes part of that whole scene of the Egyptians chasing the Hyksos out of Egypt. So there was no analysis of the local pottery ever done. Nobody ever looked at that, paid any attention to it. And as far as her conclusions, based on negative evidence, based on silence, something that wasn't there, she never really paid much attention to what was there. So I worked up a paper on this thing, presenting all of this Canaanite pottery evidence for a 1400 date, Garstang's date. Garstang was right, because he was basing his dating on the local pottery, which he was very familiar with. Kenyon totally rejected his work, his reasoning, and so on. And I should mention one other thing. On the walls, Garstang's walls around the crest of the tell, Kenyon determined that those walls dated not to late Bronze I, but in fact the early Bronze period, some 1,000 years earlier. So Garstang was wrong in his conclusions on the walls. He did not understand the fortification system. In fact, it wasn't until Kenyon's dig that anyone understood the Middle Bronze type of fortification system. So he was wrong on that, and because he was wrong on that, people have just rejected all of his conclusions. They've thrown out the baby with the wash water, so to speak, and assumed that everything he said is wrong. And that's not the case at all. His dating of the destruction over on the east side of the tell is very, very well done, I feel. And he was right, and I think Kenyon was wrong. So at any rate, I've presented several papers on this, and one popular article, which is your reading assignment, that was in BAR, and I didn't go into any detail on the ceramic analysis. I just merely gave a few reasons for my dating to 1400 BC. And then in the article, I go on to show how once you redate the destruction, you find that the archaeological evidence lines up exactly with the biblical description of the conquest of Jericho. So what was once a big problem in biblical archaeology, in that archaeology did not agree with the biblical account, in fact seemed to disprove it, once it's properly analyzed, properly dated, we see that the archaeology in fact supports the historicity and the accuracy of the biblical account. So that's kind of how I got involved in the whole thing, and that article got a lot of publicity because of the fact that I talk about evidence where the walls falling and so on. The media picked it up, and so we got a lot of good mileage out of that. I still have to publish the study of the pottery, the technical analysis. I've been involved in looking at Garstang's unpublished material. It's all over the place in many different museums. So I've spent three different trips to England and Scotland and Wales, as well as looking at what's in Israel. So it's been dragged out here quite a while, but I hope soon I can wind it up and get the definitive article on the dating of the destruction of Jericho published. Well, let's go to the slide. Thank you.